Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Tuesday. A great show ahead of us today. You're going to make some big news with Alan Dershowitz, the great Harvard Law professor emeritus, a guy who calls balls and strikes like he sees it, not like his political lenses would like to see it. He's going to make a big proclamation on the show today about his 60-year commitment to the Democratic Party. Is he going to keep it? Is he going to change it? You're going to want to stay tuned for that. It's a big, big moment on the show. He'll be our second guest today. We're going to kick things off today in Israel, where a war rages on, though it doesn't get covered very much. There is plans for a major invasion, ground invasion of Rafah going on in the Gaza Strip. And meanwhile, in the north, lots of attacks on Israelis that don't get reported every day. The only thing that gets reported on are the protests at Columbia University and Harvard and MIT and elsewhere, as well as the constant cries for the Israelis to forego their war, to do a pause, a ceasefire, so that Hamas can survive the onslaught that they brought upon themselves. Remember, Hamas committed the atrocities on October 7th. To bring us up to speed on the ground from Israel is the former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Michael Oren. He's one of the best and smartest voices in Israel. We're going to bring him on at the top of the show so you can get a real live update on what is going on the ground and not what you sometimes get as a distorted report from the traditional news media covering the war there. So two big guests today. I'm really excited for both of them. Alan Dershowitz has a lot to say about Colombia. So also does Michael Oren. I don't know if you know this, but the Israeli ambassador to the United States, Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador, he is an undergraduate of Columbia University. He came here, studied here. I think he has a lot of strong feelings about what's going on the campus of his old alma mater. We're going to have all of that in today's show. Now, a quick whirl around for headlines, because there's lots of big headlines breaking across the room. The judge today said he was going to rule on whether Donald Trump was in contempt of court with his posts about the judge and the Manhattan case. He demurred. He did not actually make a decision, delayed that. Meanwhile, Donald Trump continued his attacks, calling the judge, Judge Merchan, highly conflicted, saying it's unfair that he can't talk about defending himself when other witnesses in the case are smearing him in the public. That is going to be a very important battle. But Donald Trump doubling down on his criticism of being gagged in the case. Now, a separate study came out today. We've had a lot of talk about social media censorship, social media manipulation, certainly related to COVID-19, related to Russia collusion, Ukraine. Social media often misled the American people. New study out by the Media Research Center finds that the Facebook platform interfered with U.S. elections almost 40 times since 2008. Very specific episodes chronicled, factually documented, and footnoted. A very important study. We're going to try to get some of the players from the Media Research Center to come on and talk about what they found. Dan Schneider, a good friend of mine, I think he'll come on and talk about that in the next couple of days. But these are really, really important revelations about how big tech oligarchs, wealthy platform controlling technologists have been shaping speech and shaping thought, restraining free speech in America. The latest example out there today on Facebook. And oh, tomorrow, take a look at our site. Remember the old head of the government disinformation board? She's got a new job. She's back in the game. We'll have that in tomorrow's podcast. You'll want to check that out as well. A lot of important other news out there. Be sure to go check out Just the News. Go to justthenews.com and read all the headlines. A lot of good thought on the Niger and China infiltrations of the Virgin Island. We talked about that yesterday a little bit. I think that's going to be a very important development. And today, Trump's lawyers had a new filing in Jack Smith's classified documents case. They're accusing the prosecutor of hindering their ability to review video evidence that's at the heart of whether Donald Trump moved documents, moved boxes of information while he was under investigation. The president, former president, disputes that. But of course, he is often been unable to get the video evidence that he wants to show that what he says happened didn't really happen, or what the prosecutors say happened didn't really happen. We're going to take a look at that as well. All right. That is our show today. A great one. Michael Oren, former Israeli ambassador to the United States, followed by Alan Dershowitz, two guys who know a lot about Ivy Leagues and all of the violence and protests that are going on there today. Stay up to speed. If you download the Just the News app from the Android and Apple stores, you'll be able to read, watch, and listen to content in a single app, the Just the News content. That's a great way to do it. If you want to support our journalism, you can get a subscription to the VIP Club. Why is that cool? Well, first off, you'll get an ad-free experience on your app and on the website. And also, you'll get a chance for a monthly interaction with me. We have a town hall every month. The next one is next Monday. I'll sit for an hour or two and answer all of the VIP subscribers club's questions. That's a really fun two-way conversation we have once a month. That's a benefit of being in there. By the way, 100% of the proceeds from your subscription, $4.99 a month, $44.99 a year, goes to hiring more reporters. We keep wanting to hire investigative reporters and others here, people like Stephen Richards and Natalia Middlestadt and others. Every dollar we get from the subscription club goes to hiring more journalists. And that's a very important part. All right. We're going to take a quick commercial break. But before we do, a quick shout out for one of our great partners here at Just the News, at John Solomon Reports. You know, every Tuesday, we have a conversation about the economy. Tax Network on the front lines of trying to help Americans navigate some difficult issues with the IRS. The IRS is cracking down. They're taking more aggressive actions against middle class and working class Americans. But Tax Network USA has a brilliant war room strategy to solve your IRS problems. If you're in the crosshairs of the IRS or of the Justice Department, they can help work out problems quickly and in your favor. They have a preferred direct line to the IRS. They know which agents to deal with and who to avoid. It's not all bad news for you, too, because the Tax Network USA has learned of a special limited time IRS offer. The IRS is willing to waive up to $1 billion in penalties this year if you qualify. My good friends at Tax Network USA can get you in line for taking advantage of that offer. How do you get started? Well, schedule your free confidential consultation to see if you qualify for the limited time IRS penalty canceling offer. Call 800-245-6000. That's 800-245-6000, or visit tnusa.com/justnews. Okay, I'm going to give you those numbers again. 800-245-6000, or go to the website TN, as in Tax Network USA, tnusa.com/justnews. A big thank you to our good friends at the Tax Network USA for looking out for you. All right, quick commercial break. When we come back, Michael Oren, the former Israeli ambassador to the United States, he'll kick off our show. A lot to say about what's going on in Israel and on American college campuses as well, right after these messages.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
All right, folks, welcome back from the commercial break. As I mentioned at the top of the show, both in Israel and on college campuses, particularly in the New York area, the Ivy League schools, a sense of grave insecurity, the sort of insecurity that students shouldn't face just because they want to go and learn, the sort of insecurity that Israelis shouldn't face just because they want to walk around their communities and don't want to be struck by drones or rockets or other heinous acts of violence. Two continents, the same hatred driving both insecurities in the world today. I thought I'd bring in one of my favorite voices when it comes to Israel, when it comes to common sense. He's the former Israeli ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Michael Oren. Mr. Ambassador, good to have you on the show.
And it's always good to be with you, John. Always.
These are just extraordinary times. I never thought in my lifetime I would see the manifestation of hatred on our college campuses. Children, actually, students, the future leaders of America, chanting for more rape, more violence, treating Hamas as though they're somehow justified in their hateful, vitriolic violence that they've imposed on Israel. What went wrong? I mean, you're an undergraduate. You graduated from Columbia University. When you see what goes on in your old campus, what are you thinking right now?
Sadness. Sadness and shock. Sadness because when I was at Columbia, it was it was totally tolerant. You could espouse any political view. You could be proudly Zionist. You could sit next to Palestinians and interact with them. There was no fear in the classroom, no fear on the campus. And it seems to be all gone. And I think that what was going on we're seeing now is the destruction of a very fine educational institution and a situation where Columbia, where back in 1967, about 40% of the student population was Jewish. I don't know what Jewish student would apply to go there now. It's just too dangerous. We now have the rabbi of this campus telling Jewish students to stay off campus, stay home. That's extraordinary. And it's a threat, not just to Jews. This is a threat to American society. And it has to be treated like that. And there are people who are openly espousing terror there, calling for genocide against my people, calling for the destruction of the United States. And I wonder why this isn't being investigated more rigorously.
Yeah, you got to wonder, where's the FBI? NYPD, I think, has tried to help out a little bit, and that's good for them. But the FBI has been pretty silent on this. Congress, I think, just starting to get involved. We had a congressman on last night saying we're going to follow the money of the groups that are funding this hateful insecurity on these college campuses. So there's some creaking of the system to get going. But this has been going on a long time, right? Because not only are the protests being funded and all these things, tents and other things clearly being bought by people, but the 10-year effort to train a generation of Americans to hate America, to hate Jews, to hate Israel, to view Hamas as a better human than the Israelis who are just simply trying to live their lives in their country. That started long ago. This is like a long 10-20-year war that's been playing out, and we're just seeing the consequence of it now, right?
I think it's actually more like 50-60 years. It really begins with the youth rebellions of the 60s. Which tried to export their rebellion outside the campuses. They weren't successful back then, so they went back into the campuses and closed the gates behind them and focused on generating wave after wave of professors who espoused these views and instilled them in their students. And those students went forth into the world. And very, very clever they did this. So and campuses in the United States are probably the last place in the United States where there's free speech. And where, in order to get ahead in many, many fields, you have to be a devout Marxist. And I've taught at these schools. I've taught at Harvard, Yale. This is the atmosphere on all these campuses. And where the field, for example, American studies was a great field, has become the field of anti-American standard studies. And you will not read anything good about the United States in any of these classes.
It's remarkable. I mean, we're literally creating an entire generation of Americans that have been trained to hate their country and to hate our greatest ally in the Middle East. It's so remarkable. The Biden administration in rhetoric clearly has condemned the behavior, but it hasn't done a whole lot to crack down on it or to create a consequence for those who continue to perpetrate this hatred. Meanwhile, there is discussion, very open discussion, about penalizing Israel again, maybe some of the elite military units that have been involved in going after Hamas and trying to eradicate Hamas from Gaza. How damaging is the effort to potentially penalize military units who are simply trying to do their job protecting Israel?
Well, there's been no confirmation of this policy coming from the United States, coming from Washington, but there's been no denial either. And there have been plenty of press reports. And I would view this as a dire threat to the state of Israel, and I'll explain why. Once you start sanctioning units in the Israeli army, the message will get out. It'll get them out to countries around the world to start sanctioning units of the Israeli army. So what begins with, say, a small unit could become, you know, entire infantry battalions or divisions. And it'll create a situation where Israeli soldiers, veterans of these units, won't be able to travel abroad because of fear of landing in some European airport and getting arrested for war crimes. And then you'll have a situation where Israeli parents will think twice about sending their kids to these units, saying, you know, I don't want my son getting arrested in Belgium. And so that creates a long-term strategic threat to the state of Israel. And I would strongly urge, and I think that's an understatement, strongly urge the administration to refrain from this policy. It will endanger us. And by the way, it'll also fan the fuels of anti-Semitism in the United States. Because what are these protesters saying? They think Israel's guilty of war crimes. And what is the federal government's going to come out and say Israel's guilty of war crimes and then condemn the protests on one side, but basically confirm their heinous claims on the other. And that's that is a real problem.
There was a remarkable report that came out of the State Department yesterday. It was a head scratcher because it basically equated the human rights violations of the Hamas terrorists who killed and raped and did all those heinous things on October 7th with acts that the Israeli Defense Forces have taken in the course of war. The fact that they're almost treated the same in the same report as a human rights situation, kind of perplexing to a lot of experts in the world. Your reaction to what the Blinken State Department released yesterday?
And the Secretary of State has made similar statements. It is deeply disturbing and confusing, because on one hand, the administration has gone out of its way, for example, to veto an effort in the Security Council to unilaterally declare a Palestinian state. The administration has been absolutely instrumental in defending Israel 2 weeks ago in this attack by 350 Iranian projectiles. The U.S. military helped take down these projectiles. And then finally, this moving into the Senate with a bill that would give $26 billion in aid to Israel and the Palestinians. All that is extraordinary. On the other hand, you get remarks like this, which undercut our legitimacy, give tremendous tailwind to people who are, for example, taking over campuses and trying to condemn us for war crimes and get our soldiers criminalized around the world. So it is confusing and distressing, and I think it sends a message to other American allies around the world, beware.
Yeah, that's the problem. If you're an ally of the United States, the Biden administration has made you less wanting to be engaged with the United States. I've heard that from so many allies privately. Sometimes they say it publicly on the show. But our foes are not only emboldened by some of the Biden administration's policies, our allies are more reticent to engage us. And I just wonder what the long term.
I want to add one more important point, if I could, John. That is, this could all boomerang.
Yep.
Because once the United States starts sanctioning units in the Israeli army, someday someone along is going to come along and try to sanction the Marines.
That's right.
And when the United States protests that, the people who are sanctioning the Marines are going to say, well, hey, there's a precedent,
yep.
Isn't there?
Yep. And the United States may have sanctioned it. Yeah.
And what goes around comes around here. And it can be dangerous, a dangerous precedent for the U.S. military as well.
Yeah, no, it really is. On the ground, I think we don't get enough reporting out of Israel of just how violent things still are. There's a lot of violence and attacks being launched from the north. Of course, the Rafah offensive being prepared, and Hamas is certainly not relenting in any way. There's been a lot of violence on the ground that just doesn't get reported in the U.S. media. Can you give us a quick update of what it's like to be in Israel or to be one of those soldiers on the front lines right now?
Yeah. Well, yesterday my son went to the funeral of a neighbor of his, a 27-year-old captain, who was killed earlier this week by Hezbollah drone in the north. And it was a 27-year-old captain who was slated to get married in 2 weeks. And the person who made the wedding ring was the father of a young man who was killed on October 7th and was giving wedding rings to all soldiers who got engaged during this period. And this was the first wedding ring he made. So the whole thing is just unbearably sad. But the population of North, about 100,000 Israelis have been displaced. The northern part of Galilee is uninhabitable right now, uninhabitable. And it's an intolerable situation. I think that Israel has given priority to dealing with the Rafah situation first, and orders have gone out to reserve units to prepare for that operation. And efforts are underway to move the Palestinian population away from the combat areas so to reduce as much as possible civilian casualties. I think that's going to go through in spite of strong opposition from the United States and other countries, because we have no choice. We have to finish the battle against Hamas. We have to. And then we'll deal with it. Then we'll deal with the day after. But we have to then focus our efforts up north. But that, you know, Hamas is a tactical threat, John. You know, with all of the horrors of October 7th, all of its rockets, Hamas couldn't destroy the state of Israel. Hezbollah is a strategic threat. It's 150,000 to 170,000 rockets, which are very accurate, very big. It is 100,000 terrorists who have been spent the last decade massacring Syrians. They're very well trained and experienced. They have cyber capabilities, and they have Iran behind them. And we've seen what that's like. So it's a very different war. That is, in many ways, a total war for this country, in which every single country, every single city, in as far south as Eilat, will be in range of Hezbollah rockets.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Nothing has affirmed more the mistake that the Biden administration made in embracing Iran, allowing the oil monies to flow, than the last 6 months. Just last week, obviously, the drone and rocket attack on Israel, remarkable. Obviously, Israel and the United States did a great job, knocked almost everything down. But it can't be lost in the American public that Joe Biden tried to embrace the very people now that have unleashed this instability and potential for regional war on the world. Do you think there is some regret, some recognition that inside the Biden administration that they went the wrong way on this?
Well, I would certainly hope so. It would require a tremendous amount of courage to say that a 15-year policy, this goes back to 2009, in the first week in office, President Obama made an effort to reconcile with Iran. It was one of his first foreign policy initiatives. It goes way back. And it has systematically failed over the years and failed in a grand scheme because Iran has taken over half the Middle East and now has threshold capacity to make a nuclear weapon. So Iran has it now a strategic alliances with China, with Russia, and America's the question is, America's still trying to reconcile with that. It would require a tremendous amount of courage at this point to say, listen, we tried, we failed, and now we are going to turn around 180 degrees and go from reconciliation to confrontation. And were America to do that, they would find that they'd have great allies in the Middle East. You'd have all these countries that would line up behind the United States to join this fight. And I don't know if it's going to happen.
And it's that ambiguity right now that I think emboldens Iran and a little bit of China, not Russia, too, stirring the pot right now. What are the key signs to be watching for? If we're in the United States, we're looking what's going on. It seems to me the offensive in Rafah is going to be the next most important stage of the war. What should we expect when that begins?
I expect that you're going to have, depends again on the level of civilian casualties. Hamas will, of course, immediately say that thousands of people are being killed. They'll say that the UN will say there's a famine throughout the Gaza Strip, something that Israel adamantly denies. And we'll see what Washington says about it. It's going to be a close thing, as they say. It's going to be a very close thing. And then my big fear is that Hezbollah doesn't wait around for us, that Hezbollah makes the initiative. I don't know why people seem to think that Hezbollah is operating according to our timetable. And they could open fire literally during this program.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And then it's a two-front war every day, and that makes it so much more complicated.
Much more complicated.
There will be a moment where Israel will prevail. It is has the military superiority to take care of both of these threats, one strategic, one more operational. Then the question is, what's next? And you and I have talked a lot about this. I think you have some of the most important insights in terms of what happens in a post-Hamas Gaza. There's still a lot of people in the Biden administration trying to bet their money on the Palestinian Authority. That maybe took a couple of hiccups in the last week. What would be the most beneficial to the world, to Israel, to the United States, to the larger Middle East? What's the best approach for a post-Hamas Gaza?
Well, if it were at all possible to get a local leadership to take over the control, local Palestinian leaders who actually care about Gaza and care about their children, grandchildren more than they care about killing ours, to get help, get assistance and intervention from friendly Arab states, the UAE, Bahrain, maybe even Saudi Arabia, to be involved in the reconstruction of Gaza, that would be optimal. I think Israel's going to have to maintain a degree of security control for a while because, you know, you can destroy Hamas as an actual organization, but you can't destroy the idea. It's still going to be there. There'll still be Hamas cells. And certainly the Israeli security will be very important in preventing those cells from metastasizing. And that would be ideal. You know, the administration wants to see a revamp or a reconstituted Palestinian Authority involved in the administration of Gaza. What does that mean, revamped? What does it mean? It's still, the Palestinian Authority is still deeply corrupt and unpopular. 85% of the Palestinians in the West Bank prefer Hamas over the Palestinian Authority. So what does that mean? And the last time someone tried to put the Palestinian Authority in Gaza was 2005, and they survived about a year and a half before they were overthrown by Hamas. People tend to forget that. Even though they received a tremendous amount of American aid, So we have to be cautious about that. But the optimal situation would be a local leadership backed by regional support.
Yeah, get some of the Arab states to lend their muscle and their support behind that. So it has a chance of succeeding economically. I guess another big part, because obviously what doomed the Palestinian Authority right from the beginning was its culture of corruption, being able to root out the innate corruption that's been in Gaza for so long, probably another important part of this, right?
Certainly. So we hope. But the most important thing would get support from our most important ally, which is the United States. And the world is watching. And I've often said that the world watches for the U.S.-Israel relationship as a barometer of the steadfastness and dependability of the United States. And I hope that message would get across to the world, that the United States is a very dependable and solid ally.
Yeah. It's our American generation's obligation now to fill the void and to make to do the right thing at this moment, because it will define world history for a very, very long time to come, is something you remind us often, Mr. Ambassador. Such a great honor to have you on. Thanks for such a great update.
Okay. Always a pleasure, John. Be well.
Thank you, sir. You as well. God bless you. All right, folks, don't go anywhere. An unbelievable conversation Amanda and I had last night with Alan Dershowitz, the great Harvard Law Professor Emeritus. You won't want to miss it. His thoughts on being a lifelong Democrat might put it in reversal. Don't miss it right after these messages.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
He's Harvard Law Professor Emeritus and author of many best-selling books, including one of my favorite, Get Trump. He's Alan Dershowitz, and he joins us now. Alan, great to have you on the show.
Well, thanks. It's a very sad time when we begin to celebrate Passover. And before I forget, my sincerest condolences on the passing of your wonderful, wonderful father.
Oh, thank you, Alan.
Celebrating Passover, and we're seeing a situation where Jews are treated like third-class citizens, like they were in Tsarist Russia and like they were in Nazi Germany. They're not allowed to express their views. They're stopped. They're shouted down. And what we're seeing is something that I believe, and this is going to be very controversial, I believe is potentially more dangerous than January 6th, which was terrible, and that Charlottesville, which was terrible, because those didn't involve as many students, as many elite people, as many future leaders. We're seeing the future leaders of America chanting, "We are Hamas." In other words, we are rapists. We believe in raping Jewish women. We are beheaders. We are kidnappers. We are murderers. That's what they're chanting. And these are people who run for Congress in 10 years from now, who will be partners in law firms, who will be working in the editorial rooms of CNN and the New York Times. And these are people who have the worst values. And you say they're kids. Well, they're kids. So was Hitler's youth. Remember who brought Hitler to power? Students at the University of Munich. Who brought Castro to power? Students. Who brought Stalin, Pol Pot? These were all students. They may be useful idiots because they have no idea what they're talking about, but they're extremely dangerous, useful idiots. And I do think that we ought to pay as much attention to these horrible anti-American protests. And remember, these are protests that call for death to America. They call for rapes. They call for, we'll do October 7th 1,000 times. There's a videotape of that. We'll do October 7th 1,000 times. That means how many women are going to get raped? These are people who are so dangerous, and yet we focus on other factors, which were dangerous as well, but we ignore this because these are our children. These are elite people. These are people who will go on to, you know, great, great careers, whereas the people who gave us Charlottesville, the people who gave us January 6th, are more likely to be on the margins of society. That's why this may be more dangerous.
So powerful.
Yeah, Alan, and a happy Passover to you. I know that it obviously takes on a very different meaning this year, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, the voices of Democrats out there serving on Capitol Hill. You've got Congresswoman Elif Stefanik leading this delegation of GOP representatives who are calling for Columbia University's president to step down. Do you expect to hear more from Democrats? Do you hope to hear more from Democrats?
We're hearing nothing from Democrats. We're hearing nothing from Chuck Schumer, who called for, you know, the defeat of Prime Minister Netanyahu. We're hearing nothing really direct from President Biden. He made a very disappointing statement. In the same breath, he talked about the demonstrators in passing, and he said, but you have to understand the Palestinian situation. No, you don't have to understand the Palestinian situation when people are calling for rape and murder and beheading. No, the Democrats are an extraordinary disappointment, and I'm coming very, very close to that red line. I am no longer presumptively voting for Democrats. I'm going to vote for whoever is the best candidate. That may include Democrats, but I have no loyalty anymore to the party that is the cause, a major cause of what's going on at Columbia today. Another major cause is this DEI program. Bureaucracy has now cost billions of dollars on college campuses, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those are the breeding grounds for anti-Semitism, along with intersectionality, which says, you know, Jews are the oppressors and Muslims are the oppressed, and free speech for the oppressed, but no free speech for the oppressors. This is also a function of admissions. Many of the students today who are protesting are unqualified students. They were admitted because of DEI. They were admitted because Qatar and other Arab countries are paying for foreign students. These are not the best and the brightest students. They are the loudest students, but they are certainly not students who are looking out for the best interests of America.
Yeah. Sir, I want to ask a lot. You have been a champion of free speech your entire career, but this goes beyond protection of free speech. This is a serious security situation. Given your legal expertise, what are some of the options that the university and police can do over the next few days to ensure the safety of Jewish students who clearly are in jeopardy right now?
Well, first of all, police are entitled to go onto private property to protect the lives and safety of citizens. So that's a myth that you can't go on the campus. Columbia won't let you. Second, Columbia can let you on the campus to protect Jewish students. We have Jewish professors and Jewish students who are afraid to walk through the campus unprotected. And that's just not acceptable. And the double standard. Can you imagine if there were students outside chanting, rape black women, K KKK. Let's do away with South Africa. Let's return to apartheid rule in South Africa. They wouldn't tolerate that for 1 second. It's a double standard, and the First Amendment doesn't tolerate a double standard. It must have one rule for everybody. But at Columbia University, believe me, there is no single standard. Jewish students are subjected to a double standard against them, and preferred students, students who are preferred by intersectionality, Muslim and Arab students and African-American students and gay students and others, are given more rights than Jewish students who are regarded as the oppressors and the capitalists. It's just pure racism, and racism should not be tolerated on private universities. Private universities are not bound by the First Amendment. They can, if they choose, and they do choose, to discipline some students. I know that Harvard University disciplined students who made racist and sexist remarks. Why is there a difference between anti-Black racism and anti-Jewish racism? They deserve exactly the same opprobrium.
Yeah,
absolutely. And, sir, I think for what most people consider what looks like America, what's happening uptown is unrecognizable on the campus of Columbia, but also what's happening downtown in that courthouse seems a little unrecognizable. And you've been one of the loudest critics of these prosecutions against President Trump. But I just want to start with the basics. As far as the established now jury pool, what are your thoughts? Do you think there's any chance that President Trump gets even a 1% fair trial down there?
He can't get a fair trial. You know, he may end up getting acquitted because there's nothing here. I mean, remember the old commercial, "Where's the beef?" Where's the crime? I heard the opening statement. I don't see a crime. It's not a crime to pay hush money. It's not a crime to do what Alexander Hamilton did and fail to disclose the hush money until others disclosed it. This idea of pay and kill, you know, the Pecker National Review thing, that's not a crime. It's not a crime to try to win an election. And it's not a state crime to make a political contribution to a presidential campaign. I just don't understand what the crime is. And I've been doing this for 60 years. I have more experience than all the prosecutors combined in this case, in terms of teaching, writing, and litigating criminal cases. And if I can't even find the crime, you know what they say the crime is? It's a misdemeanor that was expired under the statute of limitations a long time ago, and they turned it into a state felony by saying that the purpose of the misdemeanor was to violate a federal felony, which the federal government didn't go after. It's just, it's Alice in Wonderland made up from scratch, except if you go on CNN. There, it's the most serious crime since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and there's more evidence of it than there is of in any case in modern history. But that's CNN for you. The same thing is true of the New York Times. But any sensible person knows this is a made-up crime. And if the defendant's name weren't Donald Trump and he weren't running for president, no sane prosecutor in a million years would ever bring this case. And none has in the nearly, you know, 200 whatever years of American history. This is a first, and it's a terrible mark on the American justice system. And that's why it ought to be on television. Because every American ought to see how their system of justice is being distorted for partisan purposes. I understand why the district attorney of New York didn't want this on television. I understand why the judge didn't want this on television. But we, the American public, have a right to see our criminal justice system abused for partisan purposes.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, a podcast from Just the News. A big thank you to our two guests, Michael Oren, Alan Dershowitz. A big thank you for one of our great partners we're shouting out today, Tax Network USA. Go to TNUSA.com/justnews or make a quick phone call at 800-245-6000. They'll help you with any IRS problems you may be facing. If the IRS or Justice Department are coming after you, these guys know how to take care of it and get the situation resolved in your best interest. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you. Have a great evening.